Blog Talk Radio.
This is All About Wine.
All About Wine.
The talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009. Featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do in this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's
Wow, thank you. Thank you, bus people. Thank you. You know what happened? Somebody shot the whistler.
Oh, really? Wow.
He's not there. He wasn't whistling tonight, so I didn't hear him. You know, as obnoxious as he has been in the past. So I think somebody probably just shot him or gagged him. I don't know. Welcome to All About Wine. It is 7:01 on 5/19/2022. We are live. If you want to talk to us, you can't, but you can message us and we will go from there. And we have a guest tonight, Andrew, and I'm not going to destroy his last name for you, so I'll let him tell us how you pronounce it. Andrew is our guest tonight, and he will tell you all about Grace Winery. It's located in Glen Hills, Pennsylvania. He's the winemaker there, actually, at Grace Winery. And he will tell us about his journey to the Andrew Yingst, I think it might be. But he'll tell us about his journey there and all that. He should be joining us pretty soon here. And, no, actually, he is sitting in the green room. We're ready to bring him on out to the show. So we will do that now. Okay. Hello, Andrew. Welcome to All About Wine.
Hey, Ron, how are you doing? Can you hear me all right?
Oh, yeah, very, very well. Thanks for joining us tonight. Good. I'm glad you're taking the time out to spend some time with us and tell us some of the good things. You're located in southeast Pennsylvania. Am I not wrong on that?
You're absolutely right. We're about a 35 to 45-minute drive from Philadelphia.
Oh, wow.
And it's really bucolic, beautiful piece of property here. I always say this in all my spiels, but it doesn't feel like we're only 35 minutes away from the fifth largest city in the country. So
yeah, I can imagine. That is gorgeous country up there too. I've been around there and visited some wineries and all that, and it is very, very beautiful country. And first thing, how do you pronounce your last name?
Sure, it's Yingst. It's kind of a bastardized form of a German last name, but Yingst. Yep.
Oh, okay. I just, you know, it almost looked Oriental.
Yep. Yeah. There's definitely some funny stories about that.
All right. So you are the winemaker at Grace Winery, am I correct?
Yep, that's correct. I've been here for 4 years now. Well, 4 years as of July.
Tell me your story leading up to becoming a winemaker there. Where were you originally from, and what is your background and all that? What led you into becoming a wine person, and eventually what landed you at the job there at Grace Winery?
Yeah, sure. So I was born and raised in South Central Pennsylvania, right outside of Gettysburg, in a small town called Hanover. Our only claim to fame is Utz potato chips and Snyder's pretzels.
That's enough.
So, Yeah, it's that's what we're known for. But wine is definitely not what we're known for. I grew up drinking milk with dinner every single night. I can't say I had too much wine outside of a jug or outside of a box. So I can't say it was a natural fit for me in the beginning. It's not what I expected to do. I went to college up at the University of Vermont. After I got a degree in geography and economics, again, nothing related to the wine industry. But I liked agriculture, and I got to work on a blueberry farm afterwards, and it kind of just spurred the interest to see some other options. And I had a buddy of mine who we always joke, he says he had a quarter life crisis because he was 25 and didn't want his job anymore, wanted to make a big change. And he asked me if I wanted to go to New Zealand with him. After the harvest on the blueberry farm, I didn't have any plans, so I went to New Zealand with him. I traveled around the country for about 4 months, bought a car, drove the South Island in a circle twice. Not the biggest island in the world, so
no. It
was great to see everything. I got to live in Nelson and Blenheim, which are in the Marlborough regions, as well as a short stint in the Otago region. And that really introduced me to the wine world. I can't say – I didn't have a ton of money, so we were all – We would go to tastings only if they were free, but it got me interested in the whole world, and I knew I wanted to come back to the States and work in a vineyard. So I came back, and I did what all young 23, 24-year-olds do. I think I was 23. I tried to find a way to mooch off my parents, and I found a vineyard close by. Called Adams County Winery. They're in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. They're one of the oldest wineries in Pennsylvania. They make a lot of traditional Pennsylvania French American hybrids, really, really well known in the state. I've been around for a long time. I was, a vineyard hand, where eventually I got moved up to the, cellar rat, cellar assistant, assistant winemaker. I don't really know if I had an official title because it was two of us. I fell under a fantastic winemaker named Michael Vorauer, who at that time had over 30 years of experience in the wine world. He came from Texas. His background was in southern Germany and northern Austria area. So I got to really stand on his shoulders. I worked under him, I believe, for 2 years at Adams County Winery. And then he moved on to help start or get on the ground floor of Foligno Estate, which is up in the Lehigh Valley.
Mm-hmm.
That winery is more geared to Italian wines, a lot of big dry reds, but definitely with Italian twist. After about 8 months, he called me and asked if I wanted to, move up there with him he recruited me. So I said, absolutely. So he and I have a great relationship. And I call him all the time I still have questions. He brought me up to.
Hey, Ron, it's Melissa Jacobs from Grace Winery. I'm here too. I'm just wondering if you know all of these places that Andrew talking about. Do you know Pennsylvania wines at all?
Actually, not all of them, because Pennsylvania has like 20 trillion wineries. But
we're at 450 as of the most recent count, and I think in the next 6 months there's applications to get to around 486, somewhere around there.
Well, I've interviewed quite a few wineries in Pennsylvania the past about 3-4 years ago. I went through a whole list of Pennsylvania wineries I interviewed, and so I am familiar with a lot of the names up there. But then a lot of them, like I say, there's so many of them, there's no way you can be familiar with all of them. But I am familiar with the areas. I'm familiar with all that. I've been there. I've been up there and traveled around the different wineries. Oh, geez, it's been 10 years now that I was up there. So, I mean, in 10 years to now, there's probably been another 75, 80 wineries added on. So,
I think there's a big boom. I mean, in 2011, I believe there was about 100 and someone can definitely correct me on this, but I believe there was around 170, approximately maybe 180. And I remember somewhere in 2018, they crossed like the 300 mark, and so now we're up to 450. So yeah, it's booming.
Is your opinion of our wines here in Pennsylvania?
You know, this is like asking what's your opinion of food. There are so many different types of wines in Pennsylvania. I mean, it runs the gamut of taste and flavors and stuff. I've visited wineries in Pennsylvania that were farm wineries that did some unknown grapes that I had to look up to see what they were, and they made decent wines. And then I visited some with the French American hybrids that are just phenomenal. That's been around for a long time. That's done a great job. And, you know, so it's overall, you know, give it an A. I mean, it's the Pennsylvania wineries and Pennsylvania wines are really doing great. The thing is right now, and I think I've talked about Pennsylvania wines and wineries because of the Glassy Wing Sharpshooter, or I'm sorry, not the Glassy Wing Sharpshooter, because of the, Mike, help me on it. What's the bug?
The Spotted Lanternfly.
Thank you. Spotted Lanternfly. I've been mentioning the Pennsylvania and the Spotted Lanternfly quite a bit over the last 3 or 4 years because it seems like any report I get from Pennsylvania is about the Spotted Lanternfly. And so,
I mean, the epicenter was about an hour away from where I am now. Luckily, we have really not, personally, the Grace Winery has not been affected that badly from it. We got it a little bit later than some other people, even though due to our proximity, you would expect we would have been one of the first ones hit. But, you know, when I was at Foligno, we sourced grapes from a local vineyard that I think they had about 40 acres. The 1 year, it wasn't an issue at all. We got about 1,000 gallons of, you know, worth of grapes from them. The next year, we got about 140 gallons. And it was awful stuff. Well, you know, the first year was fantastic. It was one of my favorite wines I've ever made, was that Pinot Noir from them. And the next year was one of the worst wines I've ever made in my life. And then the next year he didn't make any more. He got rid of them all. He was more of an apple or oriented anyway, more orchard. But yeah, he said it wasn't worth it anymore. Now that was the epicenter where he was. Literally, I think the town or the town over is where they got introduced. But to be honest, I think we're still kind of looking for answers in general about the spotted lanternfly in the sense of it's here. It's obviously here to stay. We definitely can kill them. That's not the issue. But we are interested to see where its life pattern, what it'll do in the near future in the sense of last year wasn't that bad for most wineries. One big theory right now is that it's kind of just spread out, that they were so concentrated before that they were able to overtake vineyards, and they do love vineyards. I mean, they mostly go for hardwood trees, but vineyards seem to be like cotton candy to them, grapevines specifically, I should say. I don't know what it is. There's the one tree that they love, and they have that's kind of their I should say eggs and butter and bread, and the cotton candy, like I said, are the vines. But this year it's calmed down. It doesn't seem that bad. And now other vineyards could probably argue with me for sure, but we know how to kill them. It's just, you know, they keep coming back from the woods, so that's kind of the big problem.
What are you doing to control them, kill them? What is procedure?
Insecticide. I mean, there's really, at this point, there's no holistic way to do it. It's really just you got to spray for them. And I mean, it's the same things we have to spray for the, you know, other issues like great berry moth and what have you. They kind of die out naturally when you spray for everything else.
So,
we don't want to get too far ahead, but we sent you some wine. Have you opened it? Are you enjoying it? Because we certainly are here.
Actually, I am enjoying a bottle of the Chardonnay even as we speak. I opened up one, chilled it a little bit before the show.
Oh, great.
I, I have the Chardonnay right here. I have to tell you, it's fantastic. It really is got that classic Chardonnay aroma to it. It's got a great taste. You don't oak.
So this is actually, it's 25% barrel fermented.
Okay.
And then it spends about, and now it's a pretty neutral barrel. So, it might have had a little bit of life left in it. But we try to go for a lighter oak style here with our Chardonnay. And it's French, 100% French oaked, the 25% that does have it. And then the 75% is stainless steel fermented. And I use two different yeasts, one specific for the barrel, one for the stainless steel, to try to add some complexity to it. I like this Chardonnay a lot because I think it's our estate grown. It does really well here. It grows. It does really well with our terroir. It's very consistent from year to year. And one issue Pennsylvania can have is it can be pretty wet. So when you find something like Chardonnay, our Pinot Gris also goes really well. We're a very good grape growing site. When you find that, it's really nice to have that consistency from year to year.
Well, excuse me. I said that you didn't oak. It's you're so used to Chardonnays that are so heavy oak that you lose the flavors and the complexity of the Chardonnay because it's just like a chewing on a piece of tree or something. And I'm tired of those. I don't look for those. And this one, it was so refreshing and so light. Just a slight hint of sweetness. Now, I don't know if you aim for that or not, but
this one doesn't have any sugar in it. Now, I will add sugar if it requires it, but I really only do it for balance. We don't really make any – historically, we don't make any sweet wines here at Grace, although we are coming out with one soon called the Gracie Red, which we haven't done in about – 4 years or so, I believe. And it's probably going to be a semi-sweet red. We're just kind of putting the final touches on it now to kind of hit that segment of the market. But in general, I think you don't necessarily need to be a sweet winery to attract a lot of the people that consider themselves sweet wine aficionados. And I'll be honest, I was just in Alsace, France, and they have some fantastic sweet Rieslings. I think it just shows that the sugar is not the enemy. It's all about balance. And if you add too much sugar and throws it off balance, that's the issue. If you add too little amount of sugar, that can be just as much of an issue. So
I am picking up just a hint of sweetness. Now it might be that the oak, I'm so used to Chardonnays being so oak that you start losing some of the intricacies of it. But this one is.
For this Chardonnay, I know I didn't add sugar to it, I'm pretty sure. But what I did do is I'm a big proponent of the use of polysaccharides during fermentation.
Mm-hmm.
So what this does is it adds a little bit of that sweetness on the palate. A lot of times in the when it's described by the sales rep, it's described as a perception of sweetness.
It
softens the wine without having to add sugar, which when you look at when you're thinking about stability for your wine for over the long haul, that's really nice, especially while it's still in tank, because that sugar is if you have sugar in the tank, then it can potentially start re-fermenting in the barrel or in the bottle, which is always a nightmare. So things like polysaccharides, tannins that we'll add during fermentation, some of the oak chips, a lot of times, it gives a nice little sweet vanilla flavor to it, which is, I like to find unique ways to add those characteristics. I kind of consider sometimes sugar to be a blunt force tool. So if I can kind of more hone it in and use a scalpel instead of a hammer, I like to do that.
Exactly. Well, that's it. That's probably what I'm detecting, is that just a little hint of sweetness in there, which is surprising for Chardonnay, because people, say Chardonnays have to be dry, and you pick up that hint of sweetness in that in the back of the mouth, and you're going, oh, well, that's a little bit refreshing there. It's not not overpowering by any means, but it's a very nice flavor to it. So, but it's very nice.
Yeah, I think refreshing is a refreshing and balance are the two things that I really like to go with my whites.
Yeah, and that's, you've reached that on this Chardonnay. This is the 2020, I believe.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, it is. Yes, you did. You did an excellent job on this. This is very nice. I am looking
really
forward to
it.
The – oh, it, you can take a bow. It is good. I'm looking forward to the Cabernet Franc because I am a big Cabernet Franc fan. And and so I'm really looking
forward
to
that. We have about – On Grace, on the estate property, we have about an acre of it. We have our vineyard's a pretty small one. It's about 5 acres. And the vast majority of all of our fruit comes from, vineyards in our area, whether that's, 15 minutes away in Coatesville or 25 minutes away in the Westchester area. There's a lot of really good grapes growing around here. Cab Franc is one of them. I usually consider Cabernet Franc to be a prime grape from Virginia up to the Finger Lakes. And if it's on someone's tasting menu, I almost always make sure I get a sample of that.
Yeah, I love Cabernet Franc. I just something I fell in love with way back when I first started getting into wine many, many, many years ago out in California. And I've always been a fan. That and Barbera. Those are the two.
Yeah,
two of my favorite reds there. So
And actually, Barbera has actually grown in popularity over here on the East Coast. I think it really has that nice acidity. It's a little lighter of a red. So it's just, I think it's a little hidden treat if you see it at a winery, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, you can, and every once in a while I'll get out to California and I'll find a winery that has it. And I'll go, ooh, you still do this? Because I remember from years ago quite a few wineries and they got away from it. So, well, while we're talking about your wines, why don't we just go ahead and continue that? See, Melissa got us on this, and so we'll continue going on this. Okay, the Cabernet Franc, 100%. How long is it in?
French oak
barrels before you bottle it.
Yeah, so about 15-16 months, plus or minus a few days. Usually about a year and a half or so. And I'm pretty sure that's what this Cab Franc had. I know it's definitely over a year. I don't have the exact dates in front of me, but this is 100% estate. We had a really good harvest that year. The funny thing is actually 2018, the year prior to this, was my first year at Grace Winery, first year as a head winemaker, and it was the worst harvest on record. So it rained perpetually, never stopped raining. And then the days that it didn't stop raining, we had cloud cover and it was gray and foggy and things just never dried out. So we pretty much didn't produce, not many wineries around us produce any reds. The whites were okay, were good. We didn't really have too much of an issue for that because most of the issues with the rain really came in, post white harvest. So, for us, that's usually mid-September. We're a little bit later than a lot of the other wineries around us, just historically speaking. So the next year, we had a fantastic harvest in 2019. Maybe we were only comparing it to 2018, but everyone I talked to in the area was like, oh, this is one of the best ones we've had. So 2019, we had that Cabernet Franc that was just really solid. We don't always make a single varietal. A lot of times, our two main flagship reds are our Dragonfly Red Blend and our 1734 Red Blend. Those blends can be different every single year. They're pretty drastically different a lot of times, but they try to search for the main for singular goals. So the 1734 is always supposed to be big, bold, more earthy, a little bit oakier. And to go in juxtaposition of that, the Dragonfly is supposed to be a little bit lighter, a little bit fruitier, a little bit easier to drink, a little less tannic if you're not into that. So we're trying to kind of hit both categories. So those are the goals, and it almost doesn't matter which grapes specifically go into that. So
I see.
That's what we usually do. And then when we have a variety like 2019's Cab Franc that can stand on its own, and it kind of just hits the bar that we aim for, we make sure we bottle it because it doesn't happen every year. The reds can be tough around here with how much rain we get, or the threat of rain we get during harvest time. So when we have it, we really think it's an exceptional year.
I am looking forward to it even more now after that explanation. your Sauvignon Blanc, tell me about that. Is that the estate, or do you bring that?
It will be soon. We just planted our Sauvignon Blanc actually 3 weeks ago. Before that, it was coming from Stagg. And for the next few years until our vineyard gets off the ground, those specific vines get off the ground. We will be getting it from Stagg and Thistle Vineyard, also located in, I think it's 20 minutes for me to drive a truck there to pick up the grapes. Wow. So, they've been exceptional. We've gotten it in the last 2 years. We actually just sold out of about a month ago of our Sauvignon Blanc, of our first variety that we ever did here. And the second one is we have a big bottling day next week, where we're going to be bottling our Pinot Gris, our Sauvignon Blanc, the next batch of Chardonnay, our Rosé, and what am I missing? Oh, our Gracie Red. So it's 2 days of bottling madness. If you want to come up and work for it, we'll pay you in wine.
It's always fun. Bottling is fun. It's one of those things. When I used to bottle, I would, for about a week before, I'd start dreading it. I'd go, I need to bottle, and you start getting people together and all that stuff, and you're getting all the logistics, and you're getting your bottles, and you're getting your corks, and you're getting the label, and you're getting everything set up and all that other stuff. And then as you're doing it, it's just sort of fun doing it. Then when you're over, you say, wow, that was great. I really enjoyed that. But then 2 weeks before the next one, you go, oh, man.
Well, I'm in that mentality right now. I just spent this morning filtering all of the wines. So I'm just literally going down the checklist. Do I have everything?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I know that feeling. I'm in it.
Yeah, I hate to get in the middle of it and go, I'm going to run out of corks. But then you go, that's right. I got some over here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Been there, done that, let me tell you. The Sauvignon Blanc is a light fruity, from what I understand from your description here.
It's definitely I really went for that New Zealand style.
I was going to ask because you were there.
I got a little bit of it rubbed off on me. So I really went for that really green bell pepper flavor. And funny enough, it didn't really take too much. Like it wasn't as strong as I was expecting, but what came through was the tropical fruit, which is something I was not expecting. But it was really pleasant. Last year was our first year for our Sauvignon Blanc, and it became our third best seller.
Wow.
So I think other people really liked it too. And that's why we're bringing it back. We're really excited. Actually, this next year it's going to be a little bit different, but we're very, I'm really happy about it, especially as it's aged in the tank, changed in a really positive way. And this always tends to happen to me where, I harvest it in September, it's fermented by October. I hate it through December. January, it starts to come around on me. And then, by bottling time, usually late February, March, I'm usually in love with it. So this Sauvignon Blanc, I'm pretty happy about. We actually did a partial barrel fermentation. The barrels were more neutral than the Chardonnay, so it should really have less of an oaky flavor, if any at all. It just has a really nice. I think it has a little bit more complexity than the last one. So I'm really excited about it. It does have some of a little bit of a Surly characteristic to it, which I'm excited about because it's weird. When I think of Sauvignon Blanc, especially New Zealand style Sauvignon Blanc, you know, Sir Lee is not what comes to my mind.
Not at all.
You know, exactly. So, and it's not very nutty or any of those type of, you know, flavors. It just seems to be more rounded, which is always one of those words where someone's like, well, what does that mean? And I don't really have a good description of it until they actually taste it and they say, oh, now I know what you're talking about. But it has a really nice rounded, more complex flavor to me. I'm really happy. It still has the tropical notes to it. And as it's aged from January to now, what's come through the most is that green bell pepper is starting to stick its nose out. So I'll be really interested to see in about 6 months what flavors have come to the foreground, and what are imperceivable in the future that I'm really picking up now.
That green bell pepper is a classic New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. So it's interesting that you keep bringing that up. Yeah. Well, good. It sounds like another big seller this coming year for you then.
So, Vaughn, can we tell you a little bit about the history here at Grace and some of the other things that we do here?
Well, I was going to get into that as soon as I finish these wines here. There's a couple I'm really curious about, though, on the wines, and then we'll start listening about the history.
Yeah.
The dragonfly, you mentioned that earlier. What is the dragonfly and how did that come about?
Yeah, so I won't. There's a little bit of a backstory with it. The current owners, Chris Levine, his sister originally owned this property back in the 90s, and her favorite little memento, what she drew all the time, just a little icon that she loved, was the dragonfly. And as kind of an ode to her, he made the dragonfly red blend, and it's been a staple since the beginning. Like I said earlier, it's supposed to be a little bit, more on the fruity side, a little bit lighter. When people come to our winery and they're like, we're not big red wine drinkers, what would you recommend to kind of dip our toes into it? I usually push the dragonfly on them. It seems to be more welcoming than say the 1734 where I would recommend that more for, someone who knows they like reds and is more experienced red wine drinker.
Your cuvée, then, is that a little bit heavier but not quite as light as the dragonfly?
So the cuvée is actually a sparkling wine.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah. So this is something we're just dipping our toes into, and we're kind of this. To be honest, it was kind of a way to test our market and see what the appetite for this is for us. Now, we do a lot of weddings here at Grace. When I first got here, I think we did 10, and now I think we're over 20 this year, or right around 20. So it's becoming a really big part of our business here. And as someone who recently got married here, I definitely recommend it. So please come on out. Fantastic photos on our Instagram. So come check them out. So we wanted something to offer for those champagne toasts, and we of course wanted our own wine for that specific aspect. It's Chardonnay. It is our estate Chardonnay, and we grow a good amount of Chardonnay that slightly outpaces the demand for it. So every other year we kind of flip it back and forth. One year we do sparkling, the next year we do a still Chardonnay, and we go back and forth with it. So I believe you, so right now we have on sale the 2019 cuvée, which is, we actually just released it. We finished, it got finished bottling the other day. I will say it's fourth carbonation. Like I said, this is our entry into this world. So before we bought all of the expensive equipment, we wanted to, like I said, see what our market was. We're really looking forward to it, and we think it sold really well. And I think we're going to be putting out probably a traditional this harvest. That's the goal.
Wow, so, that sounds exciting. The Vintners Reserve, what is
That's my baby that we're about all out of. But that one I wish I could have sent you, but that was a very limited release. And I have to say that's probably my favorite wine I've ever made. It was Cabernet Sauvignon and Petit Verdot. It was, we only made about 3 barrels of it, so about 75 cases, about, you know, 72 after racking and filtration. But yeah, it was about, it was Cabernet Sauvignon at 66% and Petit Verdot at 33 or 34. And then we, the funky thing we did with that was, barrel fermentation. Red barrel fermentation. So, I had to take a head of the barrel off, put about a little less than about 2/3 of a ton into each barrel of grapes, and then quickly put the heads back on before wine spilled or juice spilled everywhere. So closed it back up, and then it macerated in the barrels. We rolled the barrels back and forth for about 60 days. So it was extended maceration at colder temperatures. Because it wasn't able to reach the high temperatures that a large tank would be able to. It bubbled away. It made a really fantastic, really fruity, but oaky at the same time. It was new barrels, new French oak barrels that it fermented in, and then it aged in older French oak barrels. We didn't want it to be too oaky. And the main reason I did this is I wanted to impart the French oak into the wine, integrate it a little bit cleaner. One issue is kind of what you said is about, sometimes when you have an oaky wine, it can really just hit you like a 2x4 and feel like you're tasting a tree, which is not what we want. We want to integrate those flavors a little stronger where you get what, I always like to call the pumpkin spice latte flavors, your cinnamon, your clove, your nutmeg, a chocolate, all of those flavors that are really nice out of a barrel. And we wanted to do new oak with that because we wanted to make sure that it really got imparted early on. So now the only case we have left, we have maybe a case and a half of that. And I might steal that myself. So.
Put it away, save it, and leave it there. Yeah, yeah. And then the last one I'm curious about is the 1734, and it says this is the anchor. What has this been around that long to be the anchor?
This is the anchor of our or the flagship, whatever you want to call it, of our series. It is our, it fights with the rosé as our best seller, but it's definitely our best selling red. It is our big, bold red. This most recent year, it was a Bordeaux variety, Bordeaux style blend or maritage, whatever you want to call it, of I think it's, if I remember, it's 50% Cabernet Sauvignon, followed by almost an even split of Merlot and Cabernet Franc. The year prior, we had Syrah in it. So it can be completely different every year, but again, it has to be matching those goals that I was talking about earlier of being bigger, bolder, a little bit more earthy flavored, maybe more tannic. So it's definitely, this is a wine that I think it probably ages the best of our series, of our portfolio. This is one that, right after we had to bottle it when we ran out, sometimes we don't, small business that we are, we don't have the luxury of being able to sit on wines for a year or 2 years in the bottle before we can sell them. We have to get it out to the people right away. So when we sold it, I think it was not quite ready yet, but it still tasted fine, but it didn't really reach its apex. And as it's been, we released this last summer, late last summer. So now that it's been, 8 months or so, I think it's really come along, and now it's opened up to be, the wine that I've really wanted it to become and knew it could become. So I'm really happy about this one. This is one, we have a guy who lives next door named Tom. He does all of our landscaping and, he's a fixture here, and he always comes in and has a glass of it, and he goes back and forth between this and the Dragonfly of which one. And I have to say, as of lately, it's a 1734 is what he always calls for. So I'm going to go with him and his ruling.
You bottling a new batch of this, you say, this coming up soon here? Is that one of them?
Well, so the 1734 will probably wait to bottle until late summer, probably early August or so. But we're getting low on the dragonfly, so that one's going to have to come out relatively soon, probably in about a month or two. And when I can't make one without the other one because they're supposed to work as opposing forces to each other. Mm-hmm. So with that being said, I make them simultaneously, but I might only bottle the one first.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, let's go back to Melissa's comments here. Tell us about Grace Winery and all the inn and everything else. I mean, when I looked up Grace Winery, I was overwhelmed with the beauty of the place and everything that it had to offer as far as the land and all that. And the history, I mean, you know, it goes back quite a ways on that, too. So I'll let you Melissa tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the property was originally a land grant from William Penn in 1734. So that's where the name comes from, 1734. The house was built right around them. The barn that is now the winery is an old malting barn from, we believe, the 1750s. We don't have an exact date, but we know the property was, of course, built in the late 1730s. And we know that the British took over the property in the Revolutionary War. So we know in the 1770s, the barn was here because the generals had the house and the soldiers got to stay in the barn. So we know the barn was here, and we know a beginning date, we know an end date. So
we're actually in the Brandywine Valley, which is part of Pennsylvania, and there was the Battle of Brandywine with Washington's. Yeah, it was obviously General George Washington at the time, and unfortunately he lost.
Not a good battle to look up the casualty rate. Yeah, not a.
No, and then so they retreated through this part of Pennsylvania and ended up in Valley Forge, or the Valley of the Forge, as it was called at the time. And they had their winter encampment there. And that is the start of Valley Forge and why is it's so important to American history.
And that's where the soldiers changed from, you know, essentially this ragtag group to becoming, you know, the Continental Army that won the war.
So they
marched in there as armies, militias of the 13 colonies, and they marched out a united force. So we're really proud of the history that we have here. And Andrew gets to go to work in this gorgeous barn. But, of course, the winery is state-of-the-art. All of the equipment that he uses is state-of-the-art.
Yeah, I mean, the winery started in, the vineyard got planted in 2007 was the first planting. So we are relatively young for in the wine world.
I noticed something on the website. So you don't have pictures of the winery itself that much. There's, you know, you're very proud, obviously, of the inn and the grounds and everything else. But I thumbed to it trying to find actual pictures inside the winery and back in, you know, the tanks and things like that. And
It's usually because I have it as a mess because I'm usually running around with my head cut off.
We are in the process of renovating the website, and we're actually filming some video next week of Andrew doing the bottling process.
All right.
So we're trying to Grace is like a hidden gem. We're trying to unhide it.
We are trying to tuck away on this this road where I think we really only have. I think there's only two houses on our side of the street that's not ours, and only a few on the other side. So it is interesting. We'll have people that aren't that far away, but like, boy, we never even knew you were here, and we live 15 minutes away. So those are some of our favorite people to get to come by. So.
Well, I'm looking through this, and Mike and I were talking about the website before the show, And he said, wow, they got a lot of people work there. And I go, yeah, even the dogs. And, you know, it's just, you know, you got a, it's a quite a
I think
a
they
crew.
Work. They work just as hard as everybody else here.
And so. They always do, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the pets are always the hardest workers. Greet the people and all that. I noticed there was little a private dining area. Do you offer something on that?
Yeah, absolutely. We have this great dinner series that's been running every weekend. The food is top-notch. Dan Wood is our chef. He's fantastic. We get spoiled here with his meals. We have right now, I believe it's and this fluctuates a little bit here and there, but we have a preset menu of three meals where you play a flat rate, and then you can get a wine pairing on top of that. And every single time, I mean, it's three courses, yes. And they're just – anytime there's some leftover, you know, some to share. It's really good.
A lot of ingredients from Pennsylvania.
Really local.
Right around here, and it pairs beautifully with our wines.
Yeah, I mean, the cheeses come from some award-winning
Birch Run.
Yeah, Birch Run, Doe Run, I believe. So they come out of Coatesville, which is not far from us. So really, there's some really good food options. Is it Newtown Square has all of the, pretty much like all the mushrooms that you're going to find anywhere?
Kennett Square.
Kennett Square. So I literally get those backwards.
All the squares.
All
thank
the squares.
You really said, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we have a tasting menu. We have a more casual dining experience in the barn that has, you know, appetizers and sandwiches, again, all with local ingredients that pair with our wines.
Yeah, I mean, you can see on our Instagram the fantastic charcuterie boards that we offer. I mean, I think I do have to say, to you know, brush your shoulders off a little bit. That's something that we do better than almost anyone else I've seen around is what we offer for food. You know, our pub burger, our cauliflower buffalo bites has been a staple on our menu since the beginning, and it's probably our top selling thing. So, yeah, and whether you're coming to the tasting room or doing the dinner series, the food is not something you have to worry about, that's for sure.
I noticed one of the big headlines here, our tasting room reopening on March the 4th. You've been closed? Yeah, is that a winter hours? What is the big headline here?
Yep, yeah, we just closed for January and February while, you know, that's where things are slower. We have a lot of outdoor space. So, you know, in those winter months, it's obviously just a little tougher to bring people in when it's, you know, 15 degrees outside. So that's when we usually do a good cleaning of everything, reorganize, see if we want to do things differently for the upcoming year. And that's when we make those changes.
So just to set the scene for you, Ron, Andrew and I are in one of the cottages on the property. This is one of the places that gets rented out. And we are looking at the horses and the vineyard, and there are people sitting around one of the fire pits drinking wine.
We're drinking wine, and with they have a kid there, so they have definitely have a s'more kit. We offer s'mores, and they're right next to our in-ground pool.
Yeah, so it's a whole experience here that we really want people to come and relax, come with their family, or come with our partner, because it's also very romantic.
It is. We have
not for me and Andrew, but you know.
we have a lot of proposals here.
Yeah.
That's one of the we get phone calls about that all the time. People coming and asking to where can I propose? It's such a romantic place. Whether it's the nature, the actual weddings that occur here, whether you just fall in love with the wine and have to take cases of it home with you. It's really a great place. It's a good place to call my office, that's for sure.
Yeah.
No, without question. Do people have to make reservations? I mean, if they're going to stay there, how far in advance do you need to make reservations, since obviously you're limited on number of people?
It depends. So right now, the tougher part is on the weekends because we have a good amount of weddings where they can rent out the facility, which I definitely recommend doing as someone who had a wedding here, had a few cocktails, and then had to stumble back into his cottage. It's really fantastic. The reservations, you know, it really just kind of depends on the year. I think everything has its seasons. So, you know, we're slower in the winter months, but we're red hot in the summer. So you definitely want to get a little bit ahead of it for the warmer months. We have a lot of people, a lot of repeat customers, and I think that's one of the fun things that I get to enjoy are you have a family, you have a couple that's been coming here for 12, 15, 20 years now, and staying at the inn, you know, seeing family or whatnot. They make this a Christmas tradition. I know one couple that comes here every single New Year's, and seeing their faces is really nice because they're some of the people that have seen this property change over the years. I've been here for 4 years and we've made some really awesome changes, including the fire pit that I'm looking at right now. So, yeah.
So, Ron, I hope you'll come visit us next time you're in the Philadelphia area.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, it will definitely be on my list, without question about it. Before we let you go, Mike, is there any questions or anything you have for Andrew or Melissa?
No, I don't think I have anything. How many cottages and how many rooms are available at the inn and at your property?
Yeah, so if you're including our manor house and then the cottages, we can fit about 44 people, and that's,
wow,
you know, if every bed has two heads in it, that's approximate. Now, we just actually bought the property right next door to us, which is another house that dates back to the 1700s. We haven't given it a name yet, so I don't know 100%. We've just been calling it 72, but it is a fantastic piece of property. We're doing a lot of work on it, and we're really excited. I think it's going to be ready by this fall, and it's going to be more geared towards you know, people renting out that entire house because it's slight, you know, it's the property in next door. So it's a little bit more secluded, so you can have a whole family rent that place out, or maybe a couple families rent that place out, and that'll be, I believe it's another 3 or 4 bedrooms on top of that. So 44, about, you know, approximately 44 heads right now. I think we have about 15 different rooms, and each one is unique. I think one thing that's nice is you can go on our site and you can see every single room, and you notice how different and well manicured each one is. They're really nice.
I think we see people wanting, especially since the pandemic, wanting experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So when they come here, they stay on the estate. But there's also a lot to do in the area. We have Longwood Gardens right nearby, and a lot of, you know, day trip kind of things. And you come home and eat and drink here.
Yeah, I mean, Longwood Gardens is fantastic here. The city is only, you know, 35, 45 minutes away. If you want to catch a ball game, it's on the, you know, it's on the closer part of the city for us, which is great.
Yeah.
You know, you can go to the Chesapeake Bay in an hour. You know, there's a lot of things you can do in this area. And I've loved making this area my home. And I think anyone that comes out and visits here will see why.
I'm just curious. You were talking about, you know, the new areas and wood and all that. Wildlife. You must have a lot of wildlife wandering around that area.
We got a lot of deer, that's for sure.
Yeah, there's deer everywhere.
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially Pennsylvania, it's just, we've got a lot of wildlife.
Well, we have a zoo here.
We do have a zoo. We have the Philly Zoo, the oldest zoo in America, and then we also have, what's the one that's right?
We have animals on the farm.
Oh, yeah. I can't forget the donkey. We got donkeys. We got llamas. I'm sorry, alpacas.
Alpacas,
the difference.
Yeah.
Donkeys.
Alpacas.
We got plenty of goats, who are my favorite, and we got two horses, Radar and Bishop, that are on property. So, and our general manager Cody Festerman, he loves to take people out to do little excursions with the animals, kind of meet the animals. I think it's called. So that's always really fun.
And the brides really love getting their pictures taken with the donkey. I don't know what that's about.
That's the husband. That's
the
husband.
That's the husband, yeah. I've got my
new
ass.
Yeah, you'll see a lot of photos of with the white, big white horse. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine. Are you on a wine trail up there in Pennsylvania or not?
Not specifically, because we're a little bit – there are some. There's the Brandywine Valley Wine Trail. There are a few others that we're adjacent to. But because Grace is one of the smaller, more boutique wineries, It's a little difficult to just have people, you know, too many people come, I think.
Yeah.
So it's not the kind of place where there's going to be busloads of people pulling up.
Yeah, that's
right.
Absolutely true. We definitely cater to families, small parties. You know, parties of 12 or under is really our bread and butter.
Oh, okay. And an AVA, are you in an AVA there?
Not officially, no, we're not. And there's not a ton in I think we're right next to one. But, yeah, we're not in official AVA.
Okay. I mean, just things I'm curious about, I usually always ask.
Yeah, of course.
Get those answers.
Well, I mean, if soon enough we'll eventually be in Chianti. That's taken over everywhere of Italy, so.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, before we leave, I want you to give me contact information, email, Facebook, Twitter, website, phone number,
yeah.
Everything. Any way somebody wants to get a hold of you, give me all the information so everybody knows how to get a hold of you.
Absolutely. So our website is gracewinery.com, so pretty easy. All of our Instagram handles are in at Grace Winery, all of the socials. You can go to our website and go and get our phone number. We're pretty easy to find, despite how secluded we are. So.
Yeah, and that's INN.
That's correct. In at Grace Winery. Yep. In like a bed and breakfast. Yep.
All right. Yeah. So, all right. Well, Melissa, I'm glad you were able to join us. And Andrew, thank you so much for taking the time to come on and tell us all about Grace Winery and your wines and the whole place there and all that. And yes, I am definitely going to put you on my list next time I'm up in Pennsylvania. I have relatives in Maryland. And so.
Oh, perfect. Yep.
That's just a hop away, I mean, really. So I will.
You know, you can do there's so many wineries out here on the East Coast really just do a huge excursion from Maryland. You know, you can start in Virginia and work your way up to the Finger Lakes. Just make sure you stop in at us.
And be sure you have about 6 months to do that because there are so many wineries.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Thanks so much for your time, Ron. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. And thank you so much for the wines. I am enjoying this Chardonnay tremendously, and I am really looking forward to the Cabernet Franc.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Y'all take care. Have yourself a good evening, and the best to you on everything else.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ron. Bye-bye.
Bye now. All right. And they're gone.
Yeah.
Melissa is the one I have been contacting and going through and all that. And that surprised me. She popped in there like that. So,
yeah. When she asked about, if you knew anything about the Pennsylvania wineries, I went back to the site and counted all of the wineries and guests we had from Pennsylvania. I think I counted 13. I think there'll be 14. But, quite a few. Halifax, Bedford, Hershey, York.
Oh.
Yorkhaven,
I could tell
them
we interviewed quite a few of them, really. Yeah.
So we have talked to quite a few in Pennsylvania. Good. And then the wine class of them, I think, was one. And they're based in Pennsylvania. Yeah, there's quite a few. So.
Yeah. And we had a lawyer who represented Pennsylvania wineries and stuff too. He was on. So we've had Pennsylvania more than its share of representation on the program.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very good. All right. Well, we're almost at
about
a minute from 8 o'clock. Yep. You have anything else to add, or we'll just tell them about our guest Saturday morning.
Tell them about our guest. I'll let you tell them about our guest.
Oh, well, we have a guest Saturday morning. Let me go to my, I know it's, she's from, God, I want to say Kent, the UK, I believe.
I want to say Kent also.
Yeah, I believe it was Kent. But I'm trying to back up here and find the winery. It was something with a G. If I can find it, it was Oh, come on. Gus Born Wines. She'll be, I think it's Reese.
Why can't I find it?
Laura, Master Sommelier from Gus Born Wines, will be on Saturday the 21st at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, which is going to be like Monday her time. I don't know what it is. A little different. It'll be the afternoon over there, but 3 p.m. UK time. Okay, I got it. So it'll be 3 p.m. Her time, and we'll be talking to Laura from Gus Born out of I should have this somewhere. I have it written down someplace, but she'll be on. I know it's in here somewhere.
You did a better job than I am. Still looking. I'm trying to find. Why am I
having this? I've
got the email too, and I don't, it doesn't have their names. It's just, not
Laura,
it. I know.
Rice or Master Sommelier.
I don't know. But Saturday morning, we will be talking with her. Yeah.
And I have the location on the Blog Talk Radio page, so it's in there somewhere.
Yeah, and I'll, let's see. No, that's not it. Listen here. Is this the one? No. I don't know. I have so many emails from Melissa Mislim, who has been studying these English wineries for us, and all of them are like back and forth, and she adds people onto it and all of that. And let me see. Not that one. We had another one in here. I don't know. Well, she will be. We will have a guest. Let's see. Is that? Yeah. Okay. I found Laura. Here we go. Laura. It's going to be the 21st. Okay, that'll work for us. Laura Race. She is a master sommelier, so from England, which is even less master sommeliers in England than there are here in the United States. So she is one of the few rare ones that is female and from England. So that should be interesting. So there we go. All right. Very good.
I guess that will join us Saturday morning.
Yeah. 10 o'clock.
10 a.m. Eastern time. Yeah,
10 a.m. Eastern time. Yeah, it will be 3 p.m. Yeah. So I look forward to that.
Okay. Yep. All right, we got to update something. All right. We'll see you all Saturday. And then our regular show will be Thursday again, live on Blog Talk Radio, Facebook, and YouTube. So thank you all for tuning in. Have a great weekend, the rest of the week. Yeah, tomorrow's Friday already. And hopefully you'll tune in on Saturday.
You need to do is get up at 7, listen to Mike's radio show on Sky Blue, and then after that, that's from 7 to 9, and after that, just flip it over to All About Wine, and you can listen to us there. So that'll work out well for you there.
You'd probably be able to hear me better on Jetstream Radio. But
Sky Blue. There, I did it again. I keep saying Sky Blue, and you're on Jetstream. Why do I do that?
I was on there. You know, when I first went to Jetstream, it took me about probably 4 or 5 shows to stop. I was stopping myself because, all right, Sky. And I go, oh, my gosh, what am I doing? But, getting it through. I think you mentioned it last week, and I was like, okay, this Skype, they'll find it.
Yeah, I did. I did Skype last week. I'm sure I did. It's Jetstream. Jetstream. Get Skype out of the head. It's Jetstream. Oh, man.
It's just every once in a while, I won't be thinking, what am I on or something. Luckily, I have on the program, it's on the program window, I guess. On there. Sometimes I gotta look up and go, okay, what am I doing again? Okay.
I don't know why. Well, you were on you were on Sky Blue for how long? You know, a couple years.
Years. Oh yeah, long time.
Long time.
More than five, I think. It was almost five or six years.
Yeah,
it was a long time.
So that just got embedded in my head, and I'm having a hard time. And yours, and so it's Jetstream.
Saturday. Okay.
And if we ever say Sky Blue, ignore us. What we really mean is Jetstream. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have the closed captioning redo it. So.
Yes. Right. Change it.
Yeah.
So there you go. Right. So listen to Mike on Jetstream Saturday morning, starting at 7 to 9, and then flip it over and listen to All About Wine at 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey. That'll be interesting.
That would
be good. 3 p.m. UK.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. We'll talk to you all then. Thank you.
Yeah. Have a good weekend. Thanks for listening. Be safe.
Video is there. It is. Wow.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
Oh. And green.